The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 494. It's the 31st of May, 2016, on the podcast today. I have Chairman and CEO of Inspirit Energy, INSP, John Gunn, explains why the government's revised feed-in tariff scheme for micro CHP technologies will have no impact on their business, no impact at all. In fact, it's more likely it's a positive. Also on the podcast, Doc Holliday, small cap aficionado, chats about the following stocks: Andalas Energy and Power, MX Oil, Prospects Oil and Gas, Ferrum Crescent, and PCG Entertainment. The legend of the chart, that is Zach Mir, will be charting CloudTag. Wow, it's a strong stock at the moment. Ithaca Energy, IMI Pharma, Minds and Machines, Scancell Holdings, Strategic Minerals, Venn Life, and Wishbone Gold. And today's penny stock with potential, suggested by Stephen, is Legendary Investments, ticker code LEG. I'll read that out later. I do apologise for the lateness of this podcast, and also the quality you may hear in John Gunn's audio. The internet fell over. I say that, I've been on the phone to Virgin Media for half an hour, pulling my hair out. So I apologise if I sound stressed. And breathe.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is CEO and Chairman of Inspirit Energy, that's INSP, John Gunn. Thank you for coming on, John.
Good afternoon. Glad to join you.
That's okay. Now, for anyone listening, I've got to apologise for a lack of quality here. I've had an issue with my internet. So John's actually on the phone, on speakerphone. But so thanks for putting up with this, John. So first and foremost, John, for anyone not familiar with Inspirit Energy, can you go through a basic summary of what you're all about there?
Of course, yes. Inspirit Energy have developed and now going into the manufacturing phase, producing a boiler, a domestic rated boiler that is suitable for both your home or for small commercial installation. And our boiler as a byproduct produces 3 kilowatts of electricity. So aside from heating your home and your hot water, this will also power your home as well.
Okay, and where are you in the development stage of this, John?
Yes, well, we are now into a low-scale production. We'll shortly be having units going out into the markets for some of our chosen partners. We've decided to initially align ourselves with commercial partners, so our units will first will be installed into commercial installations, which is where they have their greatest advantage. And thereafter, we will then be launching the product on an e-commerce website and obviously through various other channels to enable all consumers to purchase one of these units.
Now, there's been an RNS out today, and it's had a bit of impact on the share price there. So can you take us through, John, the repercussions of this RNS, please?
Yeah, well, we had a part of MCHP, Micro Combined Heat Power, the government provide the industry with what is called a feed-in tariff, which is an incentive. The incentive is not too dissimilar than what was provided to wind and solar, which enables people to meet the sort of higher capital costs of these technologies and to adopt them. And what it really does, it enables the manufacturer to have an incentive, the consumer to have an incentive to buy the product from the manufacturer. Mm. So the government had previously had a scheme that was in place, and late last week, the government decided to actually reverse that strategy and reduce quite considerably the amount of units that would qualify for this tariff. And I think the importance really of sort of coming and speaking with you today is to really actually emphasize that Inspirit Energy wasn't actually reliant or qualifying for this tariff, and therefore it has absolutely no impact at all on our business model. The tariff was actually set for companies that produce a unit with a much lower level of electricity. And typically, competitors that are in the marketplace today, and they have an important role to play, produce units between 1 to 1.5 and possibly up to 2 kilowatts.
Mm-hmm.
In Spirit, we produce an appliance that produces marginally over 3 kilowatts of electricity. And therefore, under the government's feed-in tariff scheme, we didn't qualify because the scheme was set at 2 kilowatts. So the significance of this really is that whereas most appliances that were in the marketplace or coming to market were very much dependent on this feed-in tariff, and it was very important that the government supported this for their technologies. And without this feed-in tariff, it really does impact quite dramatically the economics for the consumer to buy one of these units. On the flip side, the Inspirit unit, because of its much higher power output, doesn't require the feed-in tariff to make an economic case to the consumer. And that's because we produce electricity at a very low cost, and therefore the saving to the consumer is approximately £2,500 per year. So for the average commercial customer of ours, could probably look at a payback on their capital expenditure on one of our units of approximately 4 years without any government incentive at all.
Okay, so essentially, you know, people are, you know, lumping you in with other MCB boiler makers and thinking, oh, they're going to suffer from this. But in actual fact, you think there won't be any hit on you whatsoever. Is that the case?
Well, I think it's important to say, firstly, Inspirit want to see a diverse range of products in the market. So what we'd like to say is that we're going to be supporting other participants in the MCHP arena when this consultation takes place, which is quite shortly. We believe that the best opportunity is for the consumer to have a choice. And we feel that our product, given our much higher power output, sits well within that marketplace. But that said, we don't intend to compete with this much smaller residential market, you know, 1-2 bedroom apartments or small homes. So therefore, these other technologies fit into this space extremely well. The Inspirit appliance is more suited for the larger homes, 3-4 bedroom plus, small commercial to medium-sized commercials such as sports centres, you know, your high street stores, restaurant chains, you know, hospital facilities, medical facilities, all these sort of installations, of which there are about 300,000 to 400,000 boilers bought in this arena per year, are much more suited to our technology because of the higher power output.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So as much as we're disappointed by the decision by government to basically review the feed-in tariff for MCHP, we don't believe that it will impact on our business model today.
And, and this review the government has undertaken, was it completely a surprise?
I think it came as a surprise to, you know, the MCHP technologies that were due to launch to the market. I mean, To be fair, I mean, the government comments that it's taken some time for MCHP to take traction, but really today we're starting to see, you know, 2 or 3 good technologies come to market in the sort of around the 1 kilowatt space, and I think it has come as a surprise to them, and I think it's I think government in the document which they published last week sort of emphasised that they sort of slightly anticipated that there could be a spike in the amount of units, you know, seeking the tariff, and therefore that could be part of the reason why they're reviewing it, because they feel that MCHP might benefit disproportionately to other, you know, clean technologies. Mm. And I think it's a pity in a way, because I think MCHP is really important to the UK today, when we're so dependent on coal and gas-fired power stations, which are hugely inefficient. And there's a new opportunity to bring about, you know, generation, you know, of technology, which will, you know, not only significantly reduce carbon emissions, but will also produce electricity at a fraction of the cost of these power stations, and a fraction of the cost of any proposed new electricity generation, such as nuclear. So I think it's the same.
Yeah.
That said, you know, obviously, from our point of view, you know, it does an impact on us, and we're obviously still very committed to bringing our technology to market. There is a huge demand for these kind of appliances. The paybacks on capital expenditure are the lowest of almost any clean technology that's on the marketplace today. And, you know, we can demonstrate that, you know, without a tariff. But it's obviously disappointing for the industry at large, I think.
Yeah, okay. All right, John, well, listen, if anyone needs any reason to put you on their watch list, could you give us 3 reasons, please, why someone should do this?
Well, I think, you know, obviously MCHP is about to enter the market, so are we. So we've gone from being a technology company now into a production company. The scale of the market is huge. You know, 20 million plus boilers in the UK, some 9 million boilers installed in Europe every year. It's a vast market, and obviously, you know, microgeneration is important. It's important for the future as well in terms of creating clean energy and obviously reducing the cost of your energy bills. I mean, quite simply, at the end of the day, if you're not motivated by the other factors, then it's clearly an opportunity for you to significantly reduce your energy costs with appliances such as the Inspirit Charger.
Marvellous, John. Thanks for taking time out, and hopefully speak again soon.
Appreciate your time. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Small Cap Authority Doc Holliday. You all right, Doc?
Hi, Justin. How are you today?
I'm all right, thanks. Yeah, some of my shares are looking pretty lively. What are you looking at? What's taking your interest at the moment?
Oh, I mean, there's loads of things going on in the market. It seems to me that some of the kind of habitual disappointers over the last month have kind of perked up a bit this morning. ADL opened quite strong. Seems to be quite an interest there. Again, the volume's good, and yeah, the shares are heading back in the right direction, although, granted, there's a fair way to go. So yeah, I mean that's not a bad start. We've found out today that MX Oil have raised even more cash. There's quite a number of shares in issue now, but they've attracted the attentions of Johnny Hon, and he seems to have come on board at just about the right time, and that one seems to have perked up as well. So, you know, there's a couple of things.
They raised some money at the premium there, didn't they? And let me ask you about something else. PXOG. I did buy a couple of these the other day because I liked the prospects here. What I know you mentioned PXOG a while back, and they've taken the time doing things. What's your take on PXOG?
Yeah, in the recent raise, and I've also bought some in the market because I think that there's a window of opportunity, and I think it's down to the company now to actually deliver something. I met with Ed last year. We talked a lot about what the company's ideas were. I was really thrilled and enthused by what I was hearing. The progress has been slow. It's been quite a disappointment, and the share price hasn't reacted particularly well. There's been flurries of interest over the last 12 months, and you know, the shares have traded significantly higher than the price that they originally came to market at. But in the end, you know, it's not particularly been a great performer to date. However, they have gone into Poland. They've got themselves where they need to be. It seems that they're completing the deal at what appears to be somewhere near the bottom of the downturn in the oil cycle. And granted, there's always that possibility we'll see further downside. But, you know, you've got gas, which has been, you know, unaffected by many companies. You know, I look at companies like Sound Oil that have gone through this downturn in the oil cycle. And that the fact that they're in that gas area seems to have mitigated that quite well. The figures, the BOPD equivalent that Ed was referring to was quite a bit too. You know, I think that, you know, when you get a few thousand barrels, 5,000 barrels of oil a day equivalent, from a company this size, it's probably got, I think they raised 1.65 million, probably had 100 or 200 grand left in the coffers. You know, this is a company valued at a couple of million or a little over, with not far off a couple of million in account. The risk, again, coming back into this and re-entering a chunk of cash again is relevantly small, but the longer it drags out, the more it starts to kind of work against you. So I would like to think that in this case, they're going to hit the ground running. One of the interesting things that I heard, and this hasn't come from the company, so it's speculation, if you will, or it's unconfirmed kind of information that I've stumbled across, is that on this recent funding round, Ed found a lot of that cash himself through family and friends, and I believe that one of his blood relatives put in quite a significant amount of cash. Again, it's not anything I've heard through an official line. It can only be treated as speculation, but I have heard that from City Rumour that a lot of that money was put in by themselves and naturally from direct relatives of the management team. So if that's anything to go by, you've got to take that as a positive. But as I say, to caveat that, he needs to work quicker and they need to be able to get news flow going. I think they will, and I've backed it for that reason.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, any other stocks you're looking at? What's your best performing stock of late?
I've had a few kind of nice little movies in the market. You know, I bought onto the Ferrum Crescent move. That was incredible. It's one that obviously you've done some coverage on, and a bit of a benchmark now. When you click on your share pickers kind of Twitter account, it shows just how dramatic a move that was. I obviously jumped on the back of that. That went well. I think it's going to do well in the future. I've seen a lot of people kind of packaging up this Moonlight project as, you know, we'll get $33 million just for this, and there's all of these other different assets and zinc and one thing and another. The fact is that you're not getting $33 million for Moonlight. So you've got to be realistic. It works against me in some respects because I've got an interest in the company, but in light of transparency, anybody that's trying to sell any asset from an AIM-listed company, particularly in a commodity that's not doing well, is not going to get the full value of sale. You know, I think over the weekend podcast, I'd heard you talking to Pete and Steve talking about a program that you'd watched where they were selling a mansion, the Queen of Versailles or whatever, for $15 million when it had got $100 million valuation. That's the reality of fire sales. That's the reality of when banks put pressure on people. I wouldn't suggest for one minute that these guys will only get 15% of the value of Moonlight, but it will be dramatically less than $33 million. I think it's priced in to do absolutely nothing. So I feel for the situation with Moonlight and that project that, you know, if they were to get $5 million, for example, it would do really, really well for that company. So, you know, $33 million, it's lovely to think you'd get that. Reality is you'll get a lot less. If they divest it for anything like $5 million, it'd have a material impact on the share price regardless. And I think it's much better to deal with kind of fact and reality over fiction and fantasy.
Yeah, okay, let's ask you one more stock then. I know you dip your toe in the water of PCG Entertainment. What's your thoughts there? They have a bit of issue. They're arguing over debt from a previous company, aren't they?
I mean, when I read the RNS, the amount that they're arguing over seems pretty insignificant. You know, I mean, you know, some people might even suggest just pay them the money and then try and recover it from your partner. I mean, look, Poulden's a legal eagle. He understands the law. He understands how to operate at this level, and he understands how to operate at a billion dollar level too. So I would say Richard's got all of the tools necessary to help steer the company away from this. I've got total confidence in that, and I think that the company has taken a bit of a hit today at this price. You know, well, where's the risk? The risk is that that they can't resolve their issues and everybody empties the account and runs. The long and short of this situation is there's so much of that stock being held in tight hands in various places. It's had such a kind of decline since its IPO. You only have to look at the trading activity today. A lot of the kind of trading was done in the early part of the session. It doesn't appear to be a queue of people trying to sell the stock. I couldn't buy it easy, so I've had to take a couple of small tranches. Look, there's a trade opportunity for those that don't want to take too much risk on, and there's an investment opportunity for those that accept that kind of revenue stream that these guys should be able to get going quite quickly will bode well. That's all assuming that this little hiccup can be resolved quickly and efficiently by the management team. As I say, it'd be different if your chairman or vice chairman happened to be an accountant and not a corporate lawyer. It would be different if you didn't have the relationships out in China that these guys have got. So, you know, let's wait and see. At this price, it's worth taking a punt at.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And hopefully I'm going to get Nick or Richard on the podcast later in the week. Marvellous, Doc. Thanks for taking time out. Speak again soon, fella.
Okay, buddy. All the best to you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now, the one, the only, the Zach Meir. You all right, Zach?
I'm all right. I'm looking forward to the summer of joy and happiness and sunshine.
All right. Where are you going?
The anniversary of the World Cup victory.
Oh, yes, yes. I see. Yeah, yeah.
Unfortunately, I just missed it because I was... I had 2 months to go before being born, but it was still, you know, something. And also, I was also born in Glasgow, Scotland, so that probably didn't go down very well up there. But I feel sentimental anyway.
Yeah, yeah, okay. All right, let's ignore the petty stuff. Let's talk about the important stuff. Yeah, stocks.
Okay, stocks. Okay, stocks. Yes, well, I've got some stocks here. Start off with CloudTag.
Oh wow, this has been a rallyer, hasn't it? I've seen this all over
DTG.
Twitter.
Yes, I can't remember that far back now, but I can't remember whether I talked about it last week or not, but who cares, you know?
Yeah, and let's be honest, we're all getting old, we all have short-term memory loss, so it doesn't matter anyway. If we talked about it yesterday, it doesn't matter.
Right, well, I suspect that I did, but anyway, it's gone up vertically, still see highs there up to 6.5p, we're around 5p at the moment, and that's valid while we hold above 3.5 to 4p. So that was the old resistance in May last year, and that should come in as support. But quite interesting that it just went straight through April resistance and hasn't looked back, which doesn't happen very often.
No, that is phenomenal rise. I've seen people talking about this for a long time, and you know, it's Fitbit way and all that. This is very accurate. And I've tried Fitbits and I find them very sort of faddy, and I didn't really get into it, but I missed out here because it's risen like crazy. But there you go. Okay, and but you said still some more to come, you reckon, eh?
I reckon a little bit more to 6.5p, which would do the trick. But it's just, I think one of the things that people might sort of say, well, you know, Zach just picks out the things that are moving. I suppose I do think moving higher, but I do try and pick out the things that which are moving higher and should continue to move higher, which is a little bit more tricky.
Yeah, okay. What's the next one that will hopefully move higher?
The next one is Ithaca Energy, IAE.
IAE, yeah.
And I like the situation in the sense that the high 52.5 was in October, and we're at 56 or just under 57 at the moment. So you've got a nearby potential support area on any pullback. You've also got the 10-day average at 49.7, so that's useful. So if there is a dip towards the low 50s, that could be worth buying into. My target there is 80p, which is a line drawn through, I suppose, the September-October resistance area heading higher. So hopefully there's a bit more left.
Yeah, nice. It's
is that you or me?
I don't know. I came through my phone, I think, and then it went through your speakers. And so I don't know. I think it was me, yes. So what's
that's right.
Yeah, Ithaca Energy looking good, 57 bents, and so it's still a way to go, you said. Nice, all right.
Still a way to go. Yes, just looks like a very, you know, just like that slow turnaround that one likes to see. Also, the way it broke through 200-day average in April and has stayed above it, even on a couple of dips even after that, which is very encouraging. Also, if you look in the RSI window, we've had a double bounce at the 50 level, which is also what I'd like to see. That's one of my own special signals. So, you know, I think not many people are crazy enough to use the RSI in too much detail, but bounced off 50 twice and at the beginning of May, and that is a continuation signal of some merit.
Marvellous!
Next up, a stock which is IMM, IMU Pharma.
I own these, and today they've done really well, and I know there's been they increased the holding. Companies bought a bit more of this year, so but they've shot up here. It's quite nice, that, isn't it?
It is quite nice because it's a decent clearance of the 200-day moving average. If you look in detail, you can see that the stock is actually gapped through the 200-day moving average, as if it wasn't there.
Yeah. Yes, that's
it's a very strong signal indeed. Recent RSI support above the 50 level, which is very nice too. If you draw a line from the November peak through December and January, you will get a line going towards 40p.
Mm-hmm.
Which sort of makes sense because that was support in September on the way down. So, you know, above the 200-day line, above 29p up to 40p at this stage. But it's just what is very encouraging is the 200-day line break, and also the way that we've had this range breakout from, let's say, between 25 and 30p. It's been there for sort of 6 months plus, so nearly 8 months. So that's a very solid looking base. And, 40 pence should just be the beginning of it.
Oh, lovely. That's what I like to hear. Of course, they've got...
I don't want to cheer you up, but...
I've had internet problems all day, and so I'm really annoyed, speaking on the phone to a call centre on the other side of the world, and then not being able to help you, so I've been pulling my hair out. So that's a nice bit of news there, Zach. There we are. Thanks very much.
Yeah, well, a similar chart, actually. Minds and Machines. I don't think I've looked at this before on your... particular program, your podcast, but
what's the ticker there?
MMX.
MMX, right? Yes.
And we've got a similar sort of situation to the last stock, which I've already forgot the name of.
It's Imipharma. Yeah.
Yes, good. Really, army.
Short-term memory there, brutal. Yeah.
Like an amoeba. Yeah. So basically, here we've had a golden cross buy signal between the 50 and 200 day moving averages in March. Mm-hmm. Had a final flush out below 8 pence for, let's say, the end of April, beginning of this month, and now up again. But it's really at the break of a 7p to 9p range. And, looking good with all the near-term moving averages rising, even the 200-day line. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking for 12 pence to 13 pence initially, which is given by drawing a line through late 2014 peaks around... 10 and 11 pence early May. Peak last year was 10.5, so just going through there, broadening triangle heading up towards 13 pence, hopefully.
Well, marvellous. It's nice to have some positive news there. I like the way you highlight the positive, Zach. You're a positive person, aren't you? Positive.
Well, no, if it goes below the 50-day average at 9.11 pence, we might start questioning it, but at the moment it looks like a breakout. And a breakout on all the moving averages rising should have decent follow through.
Yes. All right. Lovely.
Okay. And so on to a couple of old favourites. Scancell, SCLP.
SCLP. Yeah. SCLP.
This is finally we've had the lows in November, December, then actually support above 15 pence since then, which is quite good after a consolidation. Also, just breaking the 200-day moving average now around 19 pence. So I'm assuming that this is going to continue after the breakthrough of the 50-day average at 16.6 pence. So let's say above the 50-day line, looking for the top of the post-October range of 25 to 30 pence.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question, Zach. If you only had one indicator you could use on a chart and you're only allowed to use one, what would you choose?
It would be the 200-day average.
Oh, yeah, classic. All right, yes, exactly.
I think that's probably the case. Because you also have the way it's rising or falling and just whether it... in this case, we failed three times since December at the 200-day line. So that would be the only signal you really need.
Marvellous. Any more for any more?
Yes, we have another... Well, it was an old favourite now, but Strategic Minerals really has been quite a... tough one, this really ragged range since the end of April. I thought, I don't want to just look at the easy ones. This is a really difficult one. Two or three times thought it was going to go through 0.5 pence and stay there. Hasn't done that. Still in that range between, let's say, 0.25 and 0.5, yeah. Which is quite wild, really, isn't it, in percentage terms?
Yeah.
And so we're still waiting. Probably looks a little bit better now with the latest development here and a rebound above the 50-day and 200-day moving averages. The low there, 1.26, just above the 200-day average.
And the golden cross is just about to happen there, isn't it?
Well, it's not quite a golden cross, but it is a... it depends, I suppose, what sort of software you've got. But I've got it just as a cross. But either way, the main point here is that it's bounced after fishing for all those stop losses. It's actually bounced above the 200-day line, so yeah. It wasn't able to go that low, and that is a positive for me. And that's probably why the shares have flipped back so positively. I would say that hopefully this is going to be the final time where we see the move below 0.3 pence, and we'll actually have the breakout that we're hoping for. The big target above 0.25 is towards the 1 pence level, which is a 2015 resistance line heading from April through June last year and up to 1 pence.
Marvellous. And is that exactly any more left?
Just a couple to go.
Oh, go on then, go on then. Yeah, go on, I can take it.
Right. Then...
If you can give it, Zach, I can take it, Belfella, come on.
Well, yes, exactly. It's a good thing this is a family program.
What are you thinking of? I'm thinking of charts. Go on.
Then Life Sciences, Golden Cross to start.
What's the ticker there, Zach?
V-E-N, sorry.
Okay, yeah.
So Golden Cross buy signal, a real one this time. V-shaped bull flag above that for the price action of May to date. So like a, well, a U, I suppose more of a U-shape, but that's I like those. They tend to work very well. And if you draw a line from August last year through the September peak, you get a resistance line heading for 40p, which is where I think the shares are going, while they remain above the 50-day average at 24.64. So that's quite that could be quite nice if it pans out, obviously.
Yeah. And any others to look at?
The final one, WSBN.
WSBN, Wishbone Gold.
Wishbone Gold, Wishbone.
Wishbone, yes.
Right, here we have a similar sort of similar pattern for May, like a U-shape or a V-shape, you know, hitting 0.6, then coming back and then going back towards 0.6 again. I take that as a very positive development, given the way that we had the breakthrough of the 200-day average in the middle of last month. And you can see since then the shares have tried to go back and test the 200-day line, but they couldn't even actually get below the 50-day moving average.
Yeah.
So that for me looks... that for me is a very strong sign, and I'm looking for a target. If you draw a line, I suppose, through the January, the late January peak, heading towards 0.95 or a penny, and that's valid while we hold above the 50-day average at 0.39. But the difference with this one is that, or the way I look at this one is that. I'm using the stock dipping and not being able to touch a moving average as a an indicator on the strength of the move, which I don't think that many people do. There's also the bounce of the RSI off the 50 level, which also a lot of people, well, not many people do either, but we had a bounce off that for the middle of the month. So stayed in the positive RSI sphere, i.e. above 50.
Lovely, and I know you like that. And in fact, you flagged up to me that I was very aware of the oversold and overbought numbers, but you know, that you like it to be above that 50 level, don't
above
you?
Above 50. Yeah. In fact, if you look at that one, this is a great example. You know, it's a very sort of, it's not exactly the world's most liquid stock, but you can see that the shares went above RSI 50 right at the end of March, when the price was what, 0.23, 0.24.
Yeah.
And they've stayed above it ever since.
Yes.
So that's doubling your money with such, you know, just saying basically above 50, I'm a buyer, below 50, I'm a seller.
I like that. Yeah. Okay, cool.
Something.
Marvellous, Zach. And lovely to chat to you. And I'll see you in person very soon.
That's the one. Thank you, Justin.
Okay, today's penny stock with potential is suggested by Stephen. And that stock is... Legendary Investments. Thank you for getting involved, Stephen. If you know of a penny stock with potential, give it some exposure. Go to voxmarkets.co.uk/blog, click the blog there, click the link, and you'll fill in a little form, 5 or 6 questions, I think, and I'll read it out. So, Legendary Investments, LEG. What does the company do? Investment company who invests in and assists small companies with long-term growth potential. How many shares does the company have in issue? 2.7 billion shares, that is. What's the current price of market cap? This has changed since the submission, but it is now 0.27 pence. Market cap, 7.55 million. And what revenue did profit did the company have or generate? Last year, 2014-15, a loss of 0.47 million, so 470,000. Profit, but though, in 2013-14, of 900,000. How much debt, cash or debt does the company have? No debt. Recently raised $1 million through heavily oversubscribed placement. List 3 reasons why you think this company has potential. Number 1. Potential nationwide procurement management contract with NHS for virtual stock, whom Legg have a significant stake in and is already used by one of the NHS trusts and numerous high street names. Reason 2. Management heavily invested with their own cash and not afraid to sell underperforming assets. And number 3, interest in gold market-related stocks seen as a safe haven amidst current market turmoil. So that's Legendary Investments. Please do your own research on that stock. LEG, thank you, Stephen, for suggesting it. And thank you for listening. By the way, have I told you about the Vox Markets all-price sweepstake of late? You may want to check it out. It's rolled over now, 10 weeks. Go to voxmarkets.co.uk/OPS. It's free money. Doesn't get any better than that. Muchos appreciado.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.